You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the cheeky back heel of soccer podcast. It is the Massive Report on another winning Monday. And joining us to bathe in the glory of another cruise shutout is Patrick Murphy, Ori Benatar. Sam Fabi has been around for a while. Welcome, Sam. Bart Logan is here. Alex is out tonight because apparently he ran out of Cincinnati. Something, I don't know. But I'm sure he'll be back next week. Crew 2, Nashville nil. I mean, we could talk about the goals, but I want to talk about this now record-setting defensive club. First five home games with five shutouts in a row that, if I'm not mistaken, has never been done in league history. Ori, has it? I mean, that's impressive, isn't it?
Incredibly impressive. I do not believe it's been done before. I recall, I think, maybe a stat from Opta Stats or something regarding the New England Revolution one year had a similar type of record. They might have conceded a goal in their first six home games. Not too sure, but yeah, this is unbelievable from Columbus in regards to the statistics of it, to have five shutouts and five straight home games. And even though there hasn't been many fans in sports throughout 2020, you know, 80% of the games they have played at Mapfre Stadium have been in front of people. Only one of them, though, was a full crowd for the opener against New York City, which, again, was 50 years ago. But a win's a win. Good performance against Nashville. For me, I love the performance from Jossie Zardes. I think it was maybe his best game of the season in regards to contributing to both goals. The high press on that first goal, I mean, that's what you got to do. Especially if you're a good defensive team, it starts in front, deciding to go after the defender like that, winning the ball and just being tenacious. Good finish by Pedro, and then getting the nice cheeky back heel. That's something strikers sometimes have to do with their back to goal. And it was a good technique, good finish. And Jossie Zardes, for me, is the best striker in MLS right now. 9 goals in 12 games. He's playing fantastic. And Columbus Crew continue to be the best defense. And, you know, this team could be in first place with a goal difference of, you know, two or three or four. They might be leaking more goals at the back or not scoring that much. But the fact we're seeing Columbus still score goals and not concede and have a goal difference of nearly 20 is pretty remarkable, to say the least. So it's been a great 12 games for Columbus, but this week is important with Minnesota and Toronto.
Just real quick, I'm pretty sure the defensive stat is that the Galaxy, I think one year, had five straight shutouts at home to start the season, but didn't win all their games. So the Crew have five straight, and they've done it in winning fashion. I think that's where it is.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be all about. Bart, you know, when I was a kid a million years ago playing soccer, I was a scrappy attacking player who had to work for anything he got. And I was actually more excited about Jossie's assist on the goal, and as speaking to Ori's point, going up and winning that ball and doing the dirty work. I got more excited about that than as excited as I did about the back heel. But, you know, give me that lunch pail play, huh, Bart?
Oh, yeah. And that, I mean, I think that really just exemplifies the way that Jossie Zardes has developed into, I mean, not just, you know, top striker in MLS right now, which you can't argue with by the form, or argue against it with the form he's in, one of the best just all-around strikers and forwards with it, is versatility, how fast he is, that ball that he put it on there, just right, served it up for Pedro while falling to make that pass. I mean, just a terrific play, and that's what you see from Jossie Zardes every game. Even when the goals aren't coming, he's always pressing. I mean, remember, this is a guy that before this season did not come off the field for Columbus. He missed like two games max in his first two campaigns with Columbus. He's been everything for this team, and that was just it all in a nutshell.
Patrick, we played, if I'm not mistaken, differently than we normally see in the second half, where we were allowing possession. And I want anyone to speak to this because you guys are definitely more knowledgeable about tactics than I am. But speak to the Crew specifically allowing Nashville to have a lot of the possession, especially in the second half. But also speak to the broader picture as to why clubs who even have a lead would allow the other team to see more of the ball than maybe they otherwise would. What was the thinking behind it, and what's the thinking behind that overall as a soccer tactic?
Yeah, it wasn't even just the second half. I don't remember what the possession numbers were at halftime of the game, but the Crew came into the game, you know, consciously willing to give Nashville the ball. And this is obviously a Crew team that usually dominates possession, but they did so. And Caleb Porter talked about this a little bit after the game, because they knew that what Nashville wanted to do, and similar to the way Cincinnati has played against Columbus and some other teams, is they want to hit them on the counter. They want to find transition moments, turn the Crew over while they're in possession. And it's hard to do that when you allow the other team to have the ball. So it was kind of a cheeky, since we're using this word a lot, tactic from Caleb Porter and his staff to say, hey, look, you know, you think we're going to keep the ball. Well, we're going to change it up. We're going to sit back a little deeper. Instead of high pressing as they normally do, they pressured out of the mid block, which is kind of the middle area of the field. Now, the exception, obviously, you saw in the goal that Ori touched on. Giassi pressed a little bit higher there, but you know, they sat back a little bit more. The one time I noticed it originally was on goal kicks, and where they're having us sit at the press box is behind the stage. So I noticed that the Crew in the first half were dropping instead of staying up towards the penalty box like they normally do. They were dropping off, let Nashville build out of the back a little bit and keep the ball. So it was an interesting tactic, and I think it made things a little different. You know, it wasn't the dominating Crew performance that we're used to, especially against a struggling, so to speak, team in Nashville. It was more of a, you know, we're going to feel this game out. We're going to get you out of your game. And then obviously once they got the goal from Pedro Santos, that changed things a little bit. But yeah, it was an interesting idea. And I think that it showed, we've talked about this a lot over the years, the Crew having a plan B when, you know, passing the ball around doesn't work very often, or doesn't work in a game. What do you do next? And do you have another tactic up your sleeve? And Caleb Porter showed, at least in this instance, that he has some other ideas that they can throw out there against teams.
Well, I'm wondering, Ari, if would you see a scenario where maybe we try to play it the same way?
Potentially. I think that a game like this, especially in regards to the possession stat, as Pat was discussing, it's another, for me, I think it's something that shows the Crew is very versatile once again. I was mentioning how versatile their attack was during the MLS's back group stage because we saw them scoring goals in so many different ways, through direct passing, through keeping possession, passing from the back, you know, the 19-pass goal that Mukhtar had. Now they're showing that they aren't married to a single tactic. They allowed Nashville to have 60% of the ball in that game and still found a way to win. And great teams are able to adjust themselves in scenarios and still come away with points. And it's good to see Caleb Porter and the players are not, you know, so committed to having that one tactic. And even though Caleb Porter has told us a lot about the fact that this is a possession-based team, this is the kind of game that kind of shows that, you know what, we're willing to do something else to try to win if our tactic is not working. And I think that's something that great teams do, and potentially champions. And one thing I did want to mention before going back to Brian, Pat mentioned FC Cincinnati. I don't know if any of you or any of our listeners saw how Cincinnati beat the Red Bulls 1-0 at Red Bull Arena from an Olympico goal, which is direct corner kick shot from Harris Madunyanin. So what a victory for FC Cincinnati.
I missed that.
Yep. It was, I think it's only the 7th Olympico goal in MLS history.
Of all clubs to get that. And it was so late, too. I'm seeing here the 85th minute.
Yep.
Sam,
well, now I know why, Alex is not here tonight.
Yeah, Sam, insert Alex, you know, a Cincinnati joke from past podcasts just in at this spot right here when you're done.
Oh, my God. That is just bizarre. Well, Sam, since we live close to one another in the greater northeast side Westerville area, were you glad to see our guy Booba back out there after sitting in timeout for a few games?
Yeah, it's funny. I was wondering when Porter was gonna let him back out of the cage. after that debacle in against NYCFC. I think that was the last game he played, actually. No. Yeah. So, you know, I think he did. He came out with a different attitude. Having Jonathan next to him again, I think, continues to help him grow. He was a tad aggressive, but then again, considering how this game was refereed, there was a lot of really odd calls and a lot of equally odd cards towards one team and not towards the other. So, but it's good to see him back. It was good to see him in the starting lineup. You need to have that depth. If you have guys that continue to go down, I mean, we've seen last year how low we got in defenders, and that was not a great situation to be in. So good for him to be back.
Yeah, Bart, when I saw it, I forget the guy's name, but you know, I see certain officials and I go, oh, I know this guy. I can't think of anything specific, but I'm pretty sure I don't like this guy. And then we see the game unfold and I'm like, yeah, he's very, I don't know, Bart, maybe somebody could explain to me why I don't like this guy so much. And I forget his name, but it's the bald guy, one of the older center officials. He just never seems to satisfy me anyway.
And it's killing me. I'm trying to look it up because I had that same sort of just visceral reaction. But to be honest, I don't know if it was, and I think this is more in shouldn't be misconstrued as not an indictment of the referee, but it's just what I've come to sort of expect from MLS and from pro. They weren't touching anything in the first half, and even, you know, it's just, it's frustrating. It's the league, and it's what we're living with. Sorry, sorry, I remember. It's Pet Rescue. Silviu Petrescu. And just, but we've seen this from against the Crew throughout the season. And, you know, maybe it's the black and gold tinted sunglasses that I view them with. But I do believe that MLS and pro are pretty exceptionally poor.
Well, there's no more point in harping on that. I just thought about it when I saw him. So we saw Lucas come on in the second half, the eyeball test. He looked pretty fit to me. Patrick, what do we know about him as far as a percentage that he's able to give in terms of not only what we know his top level is, but also just in terms of minutes?
We talked to Lucas actually today, and he said that he felt good coming out of the game. He also said he felt it was important to get back in the game in order to kind of ramp up towards these next games. So good news on both counts. I think that you're probably pretty happy to see him not only play 20, 25 minutes, whatever it was, but he was, you know, looked like the Lucas Zelarayan we've seen this season, was involved in the second goal. I believe he ended up getting a secondary assist on the goal and, you know, kind of running at the defense, making the right decisions, those type of things. So that's all good to see. You know, my big question with him, he said, or Caleb Porter had said that his pain was coming when he was striking the ball. We didn't see a ton of that. You know, he didn't take a shot from distance or anything, but he said today he felt fine. So good news from that standpoint. The not so good news is on the Darlington Nagbe front, who you did not see in this game, and obviously he's now missed two games in a row, also with a knee injury. And Caleb Porter confirmed what we'd reported right before the game, was that Darlington had a minor meniscus issue, had his knee scoped late last week, so he's going to miss a couple weeks. Probably you definitely won't expect to see him in the scheduled Phase two games. You only obviously know beyond nothing beyond Sunday, but a blow for sure. I think you feel comfortable with Fatai Alashe playing. I think he's played fine. A guy that's given you, serviceable central midfield play alongside Artur, who I think's played really well the past two games. And, you know, maybe serviceable is not doing him enough credit. He's been good. But, I would imagine that over these next games, you probably see a little bit more Sebastian Berhalter as well, you know, obviously just because of the quick turnaround this week. And I know they like Berhalter. So No Nagby, which is unfortunate because, as Caleb Porter said today, you know, the crew's better when Darlington Nagby's on the field. Now, the good news is you'll have Zellerey on, but you know, you'd like to have both those guys, especially, as Ori said earlier, going into what might be the toughest stretch of the season thus far.
Well, Minnesota's a stout defensive team. They sit kind of in the middle of the table in the West. We already saw what they could do at MLS's back. What sort of lineup can we expect given the injuries that we know about? And part B is, whatever that lineup we think it will be, how can we get some goals out of this in the run of play? More success we did at MLS's back. I feel like, you know, we can win this game 1-0, but I don't know. Something tells me we're going to need two. Like Ethan Finley's going to sneak up and get one or something.
Don't forget like Kai Kamara.
Oh, gosh.
Well,
how could I?
Well, Ethan Finley's hurt. Could I? So I doubt you see much of Ethan Finley. He's been out with
Okay, well, fair enough. Oh, well, that's too bad. I like Ethan.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year for injuries. But I think the good thing is that you've seen this Minnesota team before, right? So you have an idea of what it took last time. Obviously, you know, giving up a goal on the set piece kind of early in that game changed things. But, you know, you think back, the crew did control the second half. Now Minnesota sat back. But I think you can look at that tape and identify, okay, here are things that we did well in terms of breaking them down. Here's where we didn't do well breaking them down. I think Minnesota probably coming in on the road will be content to sit back a little, though I don't think it'll be anywhere near what we've seen from Cincinnati or some other teams. I think this game will be closer to like the Philadelphia game a month or so, whenever that was ago, where both teams do try and play a little. But I think the crew will probably be the team more on the front foot, especially early on. The key I think here is not giving up a silly goal on a set piece or something like that. You know, you do that, you obviously fall behind, you give Minnesota confidence that allows them to sit deeper, and frustrate you. So I think that you take the film that you had. Now both teams have changed a little bit. Obviously we mentioned Darlington Nagby won't play. He played in that game. Minnesota's changed. Ethan Finley's not in there. I don't know if Kai Kamara, who just got traded to Minnesota, is going to be available for this one. I saw somewhere on Twitter that if he wanted to not have to quarantine, he would have to drive from Colorado to Minnesota because of state quarantine laws.
I was just going to say, as it says on ESPN, the well-traveled Kai Kamara, he's used to traveling, and he's probably even taken a Greyhound or something. Yeah. A time or two. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I was like, what are you talking about? Kai Kamara doesn't play for Minnesota. I'm pretty sure it's for Colorado, I think. But, I mean, that's hilarious, isn't it?
You'd have to make
he's played for a third of the teams.
He'd have to make a 16-hour drive if he wants to go to Minnesota. 1,000 miles.
And then fly to Colorado.
Eighth MLS team he has played for. And that's... That's if you separate the Kansas City Whiz and Sporting Kansas City. And no, or if you don't separate them, and I think you kind of should. But, I mean, yeah, what Kai Kamara, it's just – I would be – I know all the quarantine, that might make it difficult, but I have a hard time believing Kai Kamara wouldn't want to play this game. I mean, the chip on his shoulder he seems like he's had since that, you know, PK, and a guy who's just – thrives on all the attention, the negative attention. I think if he can, he's going to be playing in this one, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he's run himself out of, again, a third of the MLS teams, just run himself out of town.
Well, but doesn't the revenge narrative mean nothing when you have so many teams to get revenge against? I mean, it's like every game on the schedule, he's got a beef with somebody. At this point, I played for these guys for a month. I'll show them what they're missing. I mean, it's a sad joke at this point. Obviously, he hasn't figured it out, and he has no self-awareness. And I only wish that there were more than 1,500 fans showing up on Wednesday if, in fact, he was able to play, so that we could give it. So those 1,500 people will have to do the job for us. 2-2 draw for Minnesota United. just the other night over the weekend, and now I've lost the page on my did anyone watch that game? I know there's a lot of matches going around. 2-2 with Houston over the weekend. Did anyone see that game?
I have not watched that one. I have seen Minnesota play a few times since MLS is back. And, you know, I think you're going to see a similar team. I mean, Adrian Heath, like the Crew, has a way that he likes to play. And, you know, Kevin Molino, who's a guy who was in and out at the MLS is back tournament, has really come on. You know, I think I'm pretty sure he's their leading scorer and close to it in assists. You know, just a real dangerous, you know, attacking playmaker, forward, midfielder, however you want to define him. You know, that's a key player for the Crew defensively. I imagine, you know, you have to have good communication between, you know, whoever's kind of playing that number six role, whether it be at Artur or Lache, and the center backs, because he can pop up in different places. And they've made, I forget the guy's name offhand, they've added another attacker who, I'll find it here, but since the last time they played. So this is a dangerous team, you know, Kai Kamara or not. This is a team that can score goals. I think probably, you know, Philly was the toughest game that they've played thus far. And obviously they were able to get the shutout there. But I think that, Bart says Mason Toy, that's it. I think Philly may present more attacker. I'm sorry, Minnesota may present more attacking options than Philly did. You know, while Philly may be a more complete team, obviously the standings would say that. I think that, just in terms of this defense, this will be the biggest test that they've faced.
I think it's also the fact that this game will be unpredictable because Minnesota has been unpredictable since MLS is back. I mean, some of their results you see, it's like you don't expect this from Minnesota. You know, a loss to FC Dallas 3-1 on the road, losing to Houston 3-0 on the road. At home, they seem to be a better team, you know, 4-0 against RSL, 3-2 against FC Dallas. But just some interesting trends. This team scores a lot of goals, but they've also been leaking quite a bit of goals recently. In fourth in the West with only a +4 goal difference. Compare that to number one in the West, which is Seattle at +16, which is now equal to the Crew. Another trend that's interesting, and we'll see if that continues. Minnesota, two of their last three games have gotten someone sent off.
That's not fair, though. Seattle got to play San Jose, and those guys are just leaking goals. Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about a team that concedes a lot of goals. San Jose has a 6-1 loss to Portland, a 7-1 loss to Seattle, and a 5-1 loss to LAFC. They've given up 33 goals in 12 games.
Well, that's a good point, too. We can laugh at those results, and they are laughable, but I think it speaks to the point that because of the weird schedule, I don't think we know everything that we would normally know and feel confident in saying about anybody we're playing. So that's where the games kind of reveal who people are. Toronto, the last I watched them play was in MLS's back when they were run out by NYCFC. And since then, they've righted the ship. That said, a 2-2 draw with the struggling DC United, a loss to the Whitecaps as they were trapped in Canada playing matches against their Canadian brethren. Not a bad place to be trapped, Canada, beautiful country. So they got out of Canada for the first time this past Saturday and drew with DC United. What do we know about Toronto today as opposed to the way they were down there in Orlando?
They're pretty good against Canadian teams. I think three of their wins, they've got three wins each, I believe, against Montreal and Vancouver. So you can take that for what that is. You can take a look at the standings otherwise and make an assessment about the quality of this team, or just watch Michael Bradley, just clearly a guy whose best days are behind him, and other teams are seeing it. And the other thing is, not only has he lost the step there, I haven't watched a lot of Toronto games. I've watched a handful of goals scored against this team where Michael Bradley is just giving up on the play. So hate to see it. and just hate to.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing that I was going to mention about how you don't learn a lot about your team when you're playing only two teams in the course of a month. So the only stuff that we – what I would say about Toronto is that they have very talented attacking players, specifically Alejandro as well, and Akinola. I think they're very talented players. I think they're going to have some great years in MLS and maybe beyond. But when Toronto was only playing Vancouver and Montreal from August 18th till September 9th, and then they draw 2-2 against DC, who has not been very good throughout the season, they need to, it's similar to Crew, but it's even worse than the Crew in regards to the Crew have at least played a couple of games against some decent teams like Philly. They played Minnesota, and MLS is back. You know, a tough test against Chicago, played New York City twice, but Toronto's basically only played Vancouver and Montreal exclusively. So this next week for them, where they play New York and then Columbus over in Connecticut, it's going to be really important for them to find out more about their team. You don't learn a lot about someone from only playing the same two teams.
Well, and I hope not to disappoint anyone, but Michael Bradley is out with an injury, so he probably will not play against the Crew. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. Bart, you'll have to decide. Well,
Who slots in for him? Do we know?
That's
an important position.
Yeah, last week they played Osorio and Delgado in those two central midfield roles. So I don't know which one is playing that holding role that Bradley normally does. But defensively, as we mentioned, they haven't been as good. Our old friend Ola Kamara scored against them in, I believe it was like the fifth minute this past weekend. Yeah, the fifth minute. It was the first time all year DC had scored a first half goal, or at least since the MLS is back tournament finished. I saw that stat on Twitter. So, you know, not a good result against a struggling DC side. Now, they were up 2-1 and gave up a late goal. So, you know, close to getting a win. But, you know, this is a team the Crew should be able to have success against offensively. But as Ori mentioned, they do have good offensive pieces. And this will be, you know, like I said, against Minnesota, it'll be another test for this back line. You know, you've put it up on the verge of historic numbers defensively. Now you're going to have to do it against two teams that can actually attack you. And you know, this is going to be a big put up week for the Crew, put up or shut up kind of for the Crew, both in terms of getting results, but also, is this defense really MLS historic elite category?
Yeah. And then another thing to mention, it'll be interesting to see, I don't know if it'll play a factor, but just something I thought of right now, what will the field conditions be like over in East Hartford? It's, I don't know what kind of notice they've had that they're going to be hosting MLS games. So curious to believe it's probably a turf pitch. So I think it should be okay. I'm assuming it's turf, right? It's where
I think it's artificial.
It's where UConn plays football and soccer. Yeah. So it might be turf.
Now, Akinola was the talk of MLS's back. He scored 5 goals during that event, if I'm not mistaken. Am I off on that?
No, that's right.
It was 5. He's only scored once since then and only made 7 appearances. Has he had some injury problems as well?
I think they're just getting Jozy Altidore back into the starting lineup.
Well, that's a good point. But, I mean, they seem to have kind of buried him on the bench for Altidore. He showed enough that I think he ought to play more, but I don't know. I guess they're paying Altidore all the money. So,
yeah, I think I just real quick. I think with the way the schedule's been, Altidore obviously didn't play a lot early on. So I think that has played a part in it. But it'll be interesting to see this week. Pay attention to what they do midweek in terms of what you can expect from a lineup from them. Sorry, go ahead, Bart. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, no, I was saying, you know, he did obviously get the goal coming as a sub in that game against DC. So does have, yeah, just that one goal. But it looks like he's generated, and again, haven't watched him a whole lot, but just looking at some of the stats, he's generating shots as he's coming on a sub. I mean, you know, 2 shots in most of these sub appearances, even, you know, with 20, 30 minutes. So it's a nice problem for them to have. I mean, they can bury Patrick Mullins. They don't have to worry about him coming off, which isn't bad for Toronto.
All right, so we'll get our picks in for the two matches in just a moment. But we did throw it out there on Twitter, @MassiveReport on Twitter, if anybody had any questions. Dan writes, is regular COVID testing every 2 days still happening for the players and staff? Relatedly, are COVID complications the reason the injury reports have been so inconsistent and provide so little information? I feel like either Patrick or Ori can, or both of you can speak to that since you are interfacing with the team on a regular basis.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a couple things here. After the COVID situation began, when the league resumed at MLS's back, they were very cautious, didn't want to reveal specific players. And obviously that played out with the account on Twitter that was tweeting out positive COVID tests before anyone else had them and whatnot. But yeah, they're being cautious. They're saying that they are protecting players by not revealing this information. I disagree with it, but it is what it is. I think the numbers are important. The players' names are not. But the whole league has changed the way it's reporting injuries this year. And it's gone to similar to what the NFL has done. I think the NFL switched to it either a year or 2 years ago, where no longer do you have to list a player as questionable. You're essentially listing whether the player has been medically cleared to play or not. So if a player, for instance, last week, Nagby, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, Nagby and Zelrayan were both in and out of practice throughout the week. So neither of them needed to be on the injury report because they were available at some point throughout the week. Vito obviously has been out, so he has been on the injury report this past week. Adi was added with an injury. So that is how they're doing the injury report this week, this year. It does have to do somewhat with COVID, but I would not be surprised if the team decides to, or the league decides to stick with this, you know, either you're in or you're out type of injury designation going forward, just because it's pretty much easier and allows coaches not have to worry about putting out a full injury report. It makes my life a little bit more difficult in terms of reporting it, but I will say that Caleb Porter has been pretty good about discussing injuries. Obviously, we're not at training as we would be in a normal season to see, hey, these guys, you know, so-and-so is not taking part and whatnot. So when we've asked about certain guys, we've gotten, you know, more or less the information needed, but you know, it has made it a little more difficult, but obviously it's a strange year. But yes, the COVID stuff has certainly played a part. And another thing is the MLS injury report, I think it's MLSsoccer.com/injuries is a very unreliable place. That site often takes things from Twitter and whatnot. I don't know why MLS can't communicate with its teams, but I would say yeah, stay tuned each week towards the end of the week. Usually the day or so before the game, the crew puts out their match notes, and in there they'll have whether a player is medically cleared to play, and we'll certainly put that out if there's anyone added to that list or taken off for that matter. But yeah, that's kind of the situation. It's a weird one, and you know, I've had talks with the team about why this is happening this way and whatnot, and so that was all explained to me last week. So I thought that was a well-timed question, given I just got answers to it.
Well, I think the positive is that overall, positive, so to speak, maybe that's the wrong word to use, but I think that I've been pleasantly surprised by the lack of chaos that we saw early on in the truncated baseball season. And even then, I feel like baseball, after a serious amount of missteps, has finally gotten the situation under control. Knock on wood, it looks like we've gotten off to a good start in the NFL as well. I think that it's gone better than I thought it would, especially over the last few weeks. Another question for @MassiveReport on our Twitter feed. James writes, how do you view Buba's development at center back after a good performance and another clean sheet? Is there a real battle between him and Williams for the spot next to the captain?
Well, I can speak to it from the – I think if you're Caleb Porter you want Buba Keita to push for and ultimately be in the starting lineup for this team. I think he has a higher ceiling as a, you know, and he's a younger player who's still got room to grow. But I think the trade-off is ultimately, I think what he wants is to win games and go as far as he can in this competition and collect trophies. And Josh Williams is going to give you a consistent level performance game in, game out. He's generally not, although, you know, we did see in that couple games ago against Chicago, but he's generally not going to be making mistakes, marking or giving balls away. But I think Bubakate's upside and ceiling is higher for that. So I think that's the trade-off. I think you're going to see both of them this week, just with the way the rotation's going to be. But I think again, if he has strong performances, if they continue to get clean sheets with him lineup, I think he's going to get the start more often than not for compared to Josh Williams.
Well, Bart GCG Bag writes, I know he didn't play against Nashville, but how many clean sheets would Josh Williams have to be a part of before he gets in Team of the Week?
Did
you write that question or one of your colleagues?
I will say is he should be in Team of the Week every week, in my opinion.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on a serious note with that, you know, Jonathan Mensah did make Team of the Week this week, and I think long overdue. And we were talking before the show, trying to remember when the last time it was, and it was either very early in MLS is back or before, if I remember correctly, but. You know, we just talked about the historic defense this team is on pace for. And, you know, you've seen Giassi Zardes in Team of the Week a number of times recently, some other guys, but none of the crew backline or Eli Room. So, you know, you got one of them this week. Maybe if Josh Williams puts in a couple good performances over the next week or so, he gets in there. You know, it obviously we say that without looking at every single game, you know, the other defenders doing things, and you know, I'd have to go back and look at each defender over these last few weeks and what they did. I'm sure there's been defenders that have scored that deserve to be on there and things like that, but when you have such a historically good defense, you would think that these guys would pop up a lot more on your best 11, so to speak, or best 18, I think is how they do it, more often than they have. Also, while on the topic, Caleb Porter, I don't think he's been on it since maybe the Cincinnati game, the MLS is back Cincinnati game. The guy has the top team in the league, has dealt with injuries, you know, as much as he got shit last year for the first half of that season, this year has been very impressive. We talked about the tactical wrinkles they put in. You know, he's a guy who I think also deserves some recognition. You know, no, I don't think he cares as long as the team wins. But, you know, I think when you have a team as good as the crew has been, and maybe this week will be the week if they can get, you know, six.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing. You know, these guys, team of the week, FIFA ratings, I don't think they care. As much as we talk about it and all that, they're based on what they've told us in the press conferences, they are driven and focused on winning this championship this season, at least from what I've seen. So, but very curious to see when their FIFA cards come out, and we'll see if they change their opinion then.
Well, maybe they care about this. Sam Lou writes, what are your thoughts on Jossie's facial hair? Sam, do you have any thoughts on Jossie's facial hair, or is this only something Luke is?
I don't recall seeing. I saw that question. I was like, I don't recall seeing any facial hair. I hate to tell you this, all
I don't either.
Our listeners, but we are now nowhere near the field level that we normally are. So we are up and into the stands, and regardless of how strong your lens is, sometimes there's just stuff you're not going to see. And that's one of those things that we have not seen. So, I mean, if that answers your question, but
I'm looking at pictures of Giassi from the game, and he looks about as normal as he always does.
Right. I couldn't see. I don't know where the question came from, so I was a little surprised.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything. So I think it's pretty normal.
Well, I guess you should have been here last week, Sam, for our discussion on the best dad bod in crew history.
Oh, I heard. I was surprised that words. While Dante is definitely a favorite because he has built like a brick poop house. I was surprised that Emilio Renteria's name did not come up in any of that.
That's a good one.
There's a really funny story involving Doug Connaughton and Emilio Renteria, but it's not podcast appropriate. So I'll have to tell you guys sometime.
You can do anything. You can do anything on podcasts. I don't know if you knew that or not. You should do literally anything. But we're running out of time. And thank you guys for bearing with me. It's the connection here at the home office has been atrocious. So you all sound like aliens, and I'm trying to stay with you. Hopefully that's not the way it sounds when people listen. We'd really like if you would give us the 5-star review, and leave a comment with another question about facial hair or dead or whatever. But wherever you get your podcast, please give us the thumbs up. It really does help, and we would greatly appreciate that. And someday we'll all be back together again as we used to do the podcast, sitting around a table at a bar, drinking some beers, or in this case, sipping a White Claw. But whatever works for you. To be able to do that sooner rather than later. Before we go, though, we know that you love us making our picks, and we have two games to pick. So we're going to, since you're on my screen, Sam, pick the Minnesota game.
I'm going to go with a 2-0 Columbus Crew win.
Okay, fair enough. Tight and bright. I'm going to say Bart because Bart's going to come up with something crazy. Patrick?
Bart and crazy? What? I will say a 2-1 Crew win. I think Minnesota finds a way to score, but the Crew still get all 3 points.
All right. Ori?
I was very close to getting the Nashville right. Jossie hadn't had that cheeky goal with his back heel. Actually, I actually would have gotten something correct, but I'm going outside the box because Minnesota's random. I'm thinking a random result. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw, mainly because I think Minnesota and Adrian Heath know how to keep that Columbus attack, knows how to lock them down. And I think it's going to be a good tactical battle. I think both teams find a way to score like they did at MLS's back, but this time it can't go to penalties. So I think this is where the perfect record at home ends for the Crew.
All right, Bart, what is it going to be, like 7-1 or something?
I don't know that it's going to be that high scoring. I see this as a 3-1 game, Columbus Crew win. And I think that Crew is going to have at least, or they're going to get one goal off a penalty. And you're just going to have this a parade of each player just going to the other and saying, no, you take the penalty. No, you take the penalty. You take the penalty till it goes all the way down. And we'll say Jonathan Mensah taking the penalty and scoring for that third goal, the exclamation point. Maybe not a Jonathan Mensah, but Crew will get a penalty goal.
I love it. A little homage to Kai Kamara. It feels like that incident against Montreal feels like a month ago, and yet it feels like 20 years ago.
I know.
Couldn't even tell you what year that
happened. That's
the
perfect way to describe it.
2016. Yeah.
All right, 2016?
Yep.
Wow, man.
That's a sign.
I don't know what I thought it was. But who could forget the high water mark of Kai Kamara's career? Certainly not me. All right, I'm going to agree with Patrick. I'm going to say 2-1. I feel like Minnesota's going to score. I don't know why, but we'll prevail. And Sebastian Burhalter will score on a restart. How about that? I'm still that one strike against Chicago. I think it was against Chicago. Just still sticks in my mind. Just a little bit more down, and it's in. All right, we got to do Toronto as we go to Hartford, Connecticut. And because why not? Might as well play them in Hartford, Connecticut. We'll start with you, Patrick.
I am going to say that this one will be a 1-1 draw. I think that the Crew have not been nearly as dominant on the road, and I think on a week like this, maybe that's where you see a little rotation. They obviously, you've talked a lot about wanting to make Mafre a fortress. I think you see a stronger lineup in the first game and maybe a bit rotation in the second game, but you still find a way to get a point in a game where no team is really the home team.
I don't know that I like it. I don't know that I agree. We'll see if Sam agrees or disagrees. Sam?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a buzzkill because I'm going to totally agree. I think between it being against Toronto, being on turf, being in Hartford, Connecticut, so many variables. And there's probably going to be some squad rotation because I think, as Murph had reported earlier, Porter said that 4 out of their next 6 games are going to be on the road. So I will not be surprised at all if there is if this is a 1-1 tie also.
Well, I'm chagrined now. Can you better, Ari? Can you give me something to grab a hold of?
Well, I think I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction here. Sadly, I will not be able to watch much of the game. I'll be too busy atoning for my sins and starving myself of food. Happy New Year to all the Jewish people out there.
Dive into what sins you will be atoning for?
I'll be atoning for the 1-1 pick I'm going to get wrong for the home
next
game.
Next week, Ori's sins.
I'm going to go with the opposite. I think the Crew gets started on a little bit of a road warrior mentality, some good results on the road, and really a not true road game. I mean, what better place to play at Major League Soccer than in East Hartford, Connecticut? I think the Crew win 3-1.
I've never been. Apparently, my wife tells me I have a lot of ancestors that are buried in Hartford, Connecticut, but I've never been. So, Bart, do you have a burial for Toronto on Connecticut, a chilly Connecticut night?
I'm somewhat ashamed because I had Crew with 2-1, and then Ori, you know, went with 3-1. And I appreciate that. I'm gonna stick with my gut on this one.
I'm in your head.
I think it is. It's thrown me for a curve. I think Columbus is gonna come away with the win, and I believe this could potentially be the decider for the Trillium Cup, right? Unless we they play in phase 3, and aren't they supposed to be getting into the West Coast with some of those phase 3 games? I don't know on that one, but I think Columbus, if they don't, you know, clinch the Trillium Cup, they certainly put themselves in the driver's seat to capture the most hallowed trophy in all of sport. And get a 2-1 win right, against Toronto in East Hartford.
You know, a few years back, we won the Trillium Cup, and Toronto sent it back to us in a box broken. That tells you all you need to know about them. Okay, here's my prediction. Get ready for this. The Crew beat Toronto in Connecticut 1-0, and Josh Williams takes away an Olympico from Luke Polarion. It's going into the upper far corner, and Josh jumps higher than he ever has and heads the ball downward into the goal.
If you get that,
would have gone in anyway, but he took the goal.
If you get that right, I am calling CBS for you to take Tony Romo's job.
That might be the most specific prediction we've ever had, and we've had a few that have been pretty Alex, I think, once predicted that Falcao would come out of the stands and score, but that's even more prediction.
This sounds like one of those insanely crazy prop bets.
Yeah. If you get that right, I will join TK in getting a Josh Williams tattoo.
Win it all. All right, and with that, and with you guys breaking up in my headphones, I'm going to have a better connection next week where I'm going to get out my tools and fix the interwebs. For Patrick, for Ori, for Sam, for Bart, again, like and comment. Give us some love. There's not enough love going around. So do that for me, will you? I'm Brian. I appreciate you listening. And, you know, check out my little radio station, TD105. Get a chance. And after 2 more Crew wins, including that miracle goal against Toronto, we'll talk to you next week on the Massive Report podcast.
For the 4-hour special, Ori Sins.